1st, actually last Friday of April. It's the 26th. Today we're paying tribute to kind of an icon, maybe a legend. I don't know who we're going to talk about. Also going to talk about Dealers vs. Direct and more luxury, please. The people really need. Everybody needs a little more luxury in their life. Everybody's kind of excited heading to the last week of April. Everybody crushed in March. April's kind of pretty strong as well. And, you know, here we go. So I know we're running and gunning. We have panel prep calls nonstop the last few days. Kyle and I have been on them. So Kyle's going to bounce out to a panel prep call. I'm going to wrap up the show. But that's how it is, like 2 weeks to go until a SotoCon. All of a sudden, our schedules are, you know, just scheduled by the second. And I had a little problem with my well this morning, so I'm a little late.
That's a thing.
And until you've ever, like, it's one thing not having power. When you don't have water, the whole situation changes.
It's brutal. So,
because I don't know if you know, you need water to flush toilets.
I cannot imagine. I can't imagine what that's like. I mean, I've never had like a water main pipe. I've always been residential, but to like have to manage your own well thing, like that's a whole different story.
Not a fan. But you take what you can get. Hey, SotoCon agenda is firing up. We've been on panel prep calls with so many dealers over the last few days. We're doing them more over the next few days. Everybody's on fire and ready to have an SotoCon, Kyle.
Yes, it's getting wild. Like, I was on All Things Used Cars just a minute ago, and everybody is pumped up about it. I call it a fever pitch because I think every third post that I see on LinkedIn right now is like, I'm going to a SotoCon, right? And maybe that's just my little bubble, but feels ridiculous.
Brian Benstock called me this morning, and just out of nowhere, when he pops up, I'm like, oh, what's he going to talk about? He was just telling me about how fired up he is to deliver his keynote. He was like, what are you going to have me on, stage C? You know, back in the back hallway, you know, he's joking with me. I was like, yeah, we're going to put you right before lunch. No, he's going to be on the main stage, and boy, is he fired up. He was telling me some of the results they're getting right now and what he's seeing. And you need to hear this and siphon from a little bit of that Brian Benstock energy and success. What else? Let's talk about some news before you go.
Let's do it. Let's get into it.
This morning, we're paying tribute. So if you haven't checked it out or you don't know, go to asotocon.com, grab it, check out social media. The billboards are everywhere. You should be there. You really should. But this morning we're paying tribute to Don Peterson, who was a transformative leader who guided Ford through a critical phase in the 1980s. So he passed away on Wednesday at age 97, God bless him, in his home near Detroit. His niece, Lita Peterson, told Automotive News in an email that he had passed away. Basically, if you don't recognize the name, he was basically celebrated for prioritizing quality and innovation and boosting Ford's market share and profitability very dramatically. Under his leadership, Ford introduced designs that you're going to remember. It was very aerodynamic and different at the time. The old Ford Taurus, the Mercury Sable.
The pointy nose Taurus and Sable.
Yes, they were just.
If you think pointy nose, you know exactly.
It brings me right back when I think of that cloth interior. It's amazing.
I can smell it right now, you know,
for better or for worse. But basically, Peterson was known for fostering a collaborative workspace. That is a term that's very common now, not as much back then. It contrasted really sharply with autocratic styles of previous Ford executives. He also notably purchased a controlling stake. Remember, Ford purchased a big part of Hertz. And also Mazda, Kyle, you have a little history with Mazda, but back then Ford had a big chunk of
interesting relationship. But 2008 was kind of when that one came to be, and was about a 5 or 6 year relationship. So
yeah,
like just for Ford to do that, and you know, there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, Ford dealers or people that have been around the industry for a long time, like the glory days of Don Peterson and his leadership. So you know, definitely a legacy. And a lot of people that remember the way that he led and grew Ford in the time that he did and the patience and kindness that he had. So,
yeah. So our prayers going out to the family for sure. Hopefully they're comforted and celebrate a life well lived and a pretty sizable impact on the best
97
in the world.
Like, get after it.
I want to get to 97. I want to get to 97. right. Moving on. So this conversation came up yesterday. But basically, this is an editorial and highlighting a really hot topic that we will be discussing on stage at a SotoCon with both Mike Stanton, president of NADA, as well as several state ATA presidents. And it's about dealer associations really being lobby, being kind of influentially minded to lobby against direct sales models for these brands that we were talking about, VW, Scout, Sony's collaboration with Honda and Afila. So tensions are definitely rising as like we're getting closer to a vehicle being released. A lot of conversation that I had in the panel prep call had to do with kind of these brands, Honda and VW, building these other models on the backs of the dealership model, sharing resources and executives and best practices. And, you know, they've actually taken out an advertisement in Automotive News. You may have seen it. Asking them to reconsider not going direct sales model. Here's a quote. We believe there is a difference between a brand recently born and one seeded, nourished, and grown under the protective arm of a legacy automaker. So that's going to be a continued hot topic. And we're definitely going to be talking about it in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, like this is something that we've been talking about for the last 2 years. And I think, you know, as things go, when other things take the importance of the thing right in front of us, other stuff moves to the background. And this is a conversation that has just moved to the background. You know, it's obviously still clearly in the sights of the ATAs and NADA. And actually, I was on the phone with a dealer or a rep from a dealer at a large group yesterday that was just highlighting some of the things that they're dealing with coming down the pipe with OEMs kind of mandating a lot more in the digital space and mandating a lot more that is kind of leading to this idea that there may still be this direct sales model, not just from people like Scout and Afila, that the other manufacturers, there's still undertones of that happening. Mm. So
interesting. Yeah. Yesterday, so we were on with John Devlin of Pennsylvania, Don Hall of Virginia, Mike Stanton. Who else was there? Travis Martz, Peter Kitzmiller. Basically, the bottom line is this. They're like, we want them to look at the other direct-to-sales brands that have come out and not working and just get a little mic check there. Finally, and Kyle, if you have to bounce, you got to go.
Jordan's hanging on to the crew over there.
You
for
got
me.
One
this
more.
Is, this is a live show. This
which,
is how
which
we
panel
do.
Prep is it, by the way?
Oh, man. It's a good one. We've got Effective and Clairvoy and Joel Bossom at Eastern's talking about the future of cookieless and addressable markets, right? Like what authorized or addressable markets are out there for advertising. And it's a big conversation. Like it's a bold conversation,
man.
I'm just like itching right, to get in there and get like, over here, there right here, now. Get chippy on the prep call.
So if you're wondering if they're going to be nerds at a SotoCon, we've just confirmed there surely will be despite this is your story, Kyle, hit it up.
Yeah. Despite some economic inflation, the U.S. luxury goods market has been seen a substantial 86% increase in purchase intent from 2021 to 2024, according to a YouGov's survey. The survey reveals that 26% of respondents are likely to buy luxury items within the next year, a significant rise from 14% 3 years prior. Couple more stats, 15% of Americans have actually purchased luxury goods over the past year, marking a 9% increase since 2021. Specifically, shoppers between the age of 35 to 44, we know a couple of those, are willing to shell out over $1,000 on their coveted luxury purchases. Chris Melchiori, the SVP at YouGov America, said luxury demand continues to skyrocket despite inflationary fluctuations.
Man, I mean hearing a lot
about
it. I'm
not really cool on the $1,000 on my coveted luxury purchases. Maybe these people all don't have children running around.
I know, right? Yeah, you probably are benchmarking high. I mean, I hate how I'm excluded from this now at 45 years old.
Oh,
no one cares what I think or spend my money on anymore. But I think this highlights a very important part of the conversation that's happening macroeconomically is where we were all thought we were heading in for a soft landing. That is actually changing as we speak because people keep spending money, Kyle. Consumers keep spending money, meaning inflation is going to be really stubborn. This just is another layer of it where this attractiveness of luxury goods and luxury companies leaning in to like kind of court this new broader base of luxury buyers, these $1,000 items are keeping interest rates up.
I keep hearing a year and a half. Oh, go. Get out of here. Let's go.
We'll talk about it.
More economic
obviously,
stuff
we're
tomorrow.
Running flat out. It's so that a SotoCon can be amazing
more than
for
you. Love cars.
SotoCon.com. We're building it.